Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, January 11th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Exchange-traded funds can be a low-cost way to invest. We'll learn about that in our next segment. Right now, let's talk about that computer glitch, which has delayed or canceled thousands of flights across the country today. Let's get the latest from Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University based in Chicago. Joe, thanks for joining us today. 24 hours ago, the only people who knew the acronym NOTAM, Notice to Air Missions or Notice to Airmen, were pilots. Now, thousands of air passengers are familiar with this system. What is NOTAM and why is it so essential for it to be up and functioning?
Yeah, exactly. It's unfortunate that this occurred because it really is a system that's not terribly complex. When pilots are about to embark on an itinerary, a mission, they receive information about hazards, runway closings, wind conditions, and so forth. And in a reset of that operation, the system went down. And in an abundance of caution, as they say, they decided pilots shouldn't be taking the skies without that critical information. And boy, we're paying the price.
And the long and short of the information that pilots receive from NOTAM on a daily basis is, as you said, it's weather conditions along the way, whether there's an air show, a fireworks show along the route, things you may encounter along the way that may be surprising. And it sounds very benign, but it's also critical to your flight.
It is. And we've seen enough human error problems. They're just reminded of things they may already know. Is good because when things go wrong in the cockpit, we know that cognitive decisions can be affected. So just having them calmly read that before they take off. And of course, we also have conditions where now flying birds have become hazards. There's always a new issue that pilots need to be reminded of. And I think the only good news is this outage happened in the middle of the night, but today it's lots of delays as a result.
The investigation is starting by the Department of Transportation and the FAA as to what led to this shutdown of the NOTAM system. But it just goes to show you that everything works well when it works well. But if the software powering that system is not up to snuff or maybe outdated, as we learned in the Southwest Airlines crew meltdown, that could shut down the entire country.
Right. And here's a case where apparently a backup system wasn't in place. So when they're resetting the system, something didn't function properly. And so the decision was made. I'm a little nonplussed that, Congress to wait a few hours before starting the blame game and investigations. But clearly there's something to that. We need to find out why the FAA, in effect, dropped the ball here. It's going to cost lots of people some pretty difficult travel experiences because the ripple effects are going to be felt throughout the day of all those flights canceled, really between about 2 a.m. and about 8 a.m. this morning.
Operationally, when an airline schedule gets knocked out of position, whether it's weather or some sort of technical shutdown, you might remember a couple of years ago when the Aurora Air Traffic Control Center was out of commission for a couple of hours. When you lose maybe an hour or two of scheduled takeoffs and landings, how large is the ripple throughout the entire system?
What appears to have happened today is airlines essentially pushed back their schedules a few hours. And so there hasn't that many flights canceled, I say a lot, at least compared to Southwest, 8-9% flights canceled now, not 60%. But the number of late flights, is huge, 30-40% of the big airlines. And that probably means, close to mid-afternoon or so, employees will start to hit their hours of service limit of time on the job, so to speak. And that could cause a round of mini cancellations later today. That's all yet to be seen, though.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Coming up, Exchange-Traded Funds 101.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
One potential investment tool is the Exchange-Traded Fund, or the ETF. Let's learn how ETFs work from Matt Mategan, CEO of Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. You can find the blog at blueworldam.com. Matt, thanks for joining us today. An ETF, the long and short of it, is it's like a mutual fund, but how does it differ from a mutual fund?
Well, the biggest difference is cost. that there's very, very little cost involved in investing in the ETFs, and the ETFs are not actively managed. In other words, you don't have things coming in and going out on a daily basis, so there's not a lot of turnover in it. The real value is that with the ETF, what you're actually investing in is the average, the weighted average performance of a basket of stocks, bonds, options, or not options, but futures, where you're immediately diversified. So, for example, you get the an extremely broad base, like the S&P 500 ETFs or the Russell 2000 ETFs. What you get to do is track the performance of those market metrics on a day-to-day basis. So they can be extremely diversified and extremely broad, like the two I just mentioned, but you can get ETFs that are industry specific, or even down to ETFs like UGA, the UGA. All it does is tracks gasoline prices, futures in futures contracts and gasoline. So the ETFs are something that we use, whether it's personally, whether it's in the investment club. We use the ETFs as the foundation for every portfolio that we construct because they can be so broad or they can be so specific.
What are the tax implications of owning an ETF if the value goes up or down compared to just a regular stock or a mutual fund?
Well, the tax treatment can vary, but like anything else, there's going to be a tax impact when and if you liquidate. So if you realize a loss or a gain, that's where the taxes come in. And you remind me to mention this. This has been coming up quite a bit with us lately. There are what are called the ultra ETFs, and these try when you're doing a regular ETF, like the Spiders, the S&P 500, it is a one-to-one movement with the percentage movement of the index. There are ETFs that try to track to 2%, 3%, even or 2X, 3X, or even 4X, the underlying index. These things can sound very, very sexy and very exciting. I want to caution people out there, those indexes are the tool of day traders and not appropriate for long-term holding in a portfolio.
Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today. You can find his blog at blueworldam.com. Coming up next, Disney makes changes to its American theme parks.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney CEO Bob Iger is making changes to the ticketing system at its theme parks in the U.S. Let's look at the latest moves that are part of an attempted turnaround with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. Chuck, thanks for joining us today. I don't know how many adult Disney fans you have in your life, but I have quite a few. And if you want to get them going and just send them into fits of rage, just mention Bob Chapek's name and some of the things that he did to the Disneyland and Disney World experience. Now, they are changing some things for park hopper ticket buyers at Disneyland and annual pass holders at Disney World. Is this a way of just buying some good PR with a passionate constituency?
Yeah, I think it is. It's an attempt to kind of repair some damage. Disney has been very aggressive in raising prices, and I think this is an attempt to, you know, maybe give folks a reason to accept those price increases, and also, as you mentioned, to really help repair the reputation with some of the most passionate people who do have season passes. And so they're making it easier for those folks with season passes to get into the parks without reservations. They're opening up 2 months worth of days eligible for the lowest price admission package out at the Disneyland Resort. They're offering free parking now to guests staying at Disney-owned hotels at Walt Disney World. They're They're giving free attraction photos to visitors who buy their Genie Plus service. So, you know, I think it's an attempt to, you know, A, repair the damage, you know, show that you're listening to your customer, and B, you know, try to provide a little bit more value given the fact that you have been raising prices fairly aggressively.
And Chapek came in right before the pandemic swept across the country and shut down Disney parks for several months. And then they were reopened with at limited capacity, at least in Florida. So he had to solve a problem, which was how do you make up for lost revenue and a revenue opportunity that will never come around again? You can't go back in the time machine and make it March of 2020 and recoup the money you lost.
Right. And I think in some respects, the previous administration might be getting kind of a raw deal in a sense. They kind of, you know, they came in during, you know, basically an unprecedented time for theme parks and did what they could to try to maximize profitability in a difficult situation. And I think, you know, the new administration probably acknowledges some of that, but feels it's time to maybe unwind some of those things because the times are different now and they call for a little different action.
How is Wall Street evaluating Disney stock? It's kind of a strange time for the streaming side of the business and especially for the movie side of the business, but it seems like there's a great deal of demand for theme parks and cruise ships.
There is, and you know, it's a stock that is overdue for coming back. You know, I wrote a book called Winning with the Dow's Losers, and Disney has been one of the biggest Dow's losers in the last 2 years. It was a worst performing Dow stock in 2021. It was the third worst performing Dow stock in 2022. So this is a stock that is due for some mean reversion relative to other Dow stocks. And, you know, so far it's a limited sample set, but this year so far Disney's up about 11% versus about a 3% move in the S&P 500. So that's a long-winded way of saying I think there is a nice rebound opportunity in that stock over the next 12 months.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter based in Hammond, Indiana. Thanks for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, preventing extra grief by planning for death.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Crews continue to battle a fire at a chemical plant southwest of Chicago. It's been a rough day at America's airports due to a nationwide system glitch. In Personal Finance Wednesday, why a plan for death is needed for the sake of those who survive. And the demand for mortgages is surging. We'll also update the housing market. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 173 points, the NASDAQ is up 134, and the S&P 500 is up 33. AccuWeather says unseasonably mild with clouds and some sunshine, a high today of 51. Right now we have 49 degrees at O'Hare and Midway under partly sunny skies, 42 degrees at the lakefront at 1231, topping our news at the half hour. People who live near an industrial plant in the community of LaSalle, about 100 miles southwest of Chicago, have been put on alert because of a fire. Crews are still battling flames at the Karris Chemical Facility. Explosions were first reported around 9 o'clock in the morning. Firefighters say all workers were evacuated safely. Residents of the area are being urged to shelter in place. Airline passengers at O'Hare, Midway, and airports across the U.S. had their travel disrupted today following a computer outage that resulted in thousands of delays and hundreds of cancellations. The story from correspondent Julie Walker.
The FAA ordered all departing flights grounded early this morning, but lifted that order just before 9 a.m. However, delays and cancellations continue to snowball. More than 4,300 flights were delayed and more than 780 canceled. While the White House initially said that there is no evidence of a cyber attack, President Biden said, "We don't know," and called for an investigation. The FAA said its notice to air missions system went down and had to be restored. Julie Walker, New York.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. We're joined by Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO, KKM Financial, based in Chicago. Jeff, thanks for joining us today. After a couple of jitters on Monday, it seems like investors have found the trajectory. What's driving today's optimism?
Well, I think that's right, Rob. It's been a couple of weeks all through the summer. We saw a very coiled trading session. We kind of hung around that 3,800 level in the S&P 500. But here, as we get prepared for tomorrow, we have some CPI, Consumer Price Index, more inflationary data for the Fed to lean upon, as well as the kickoff of earnings season this Friday. We have the banks, JP Morgan. So we have some optimism. You're absolutely right. But it's more of a technical trade right now, Rob. You're seeing the 2-day moving average. And I know that's a little wonky for most of the folks, but when sometimes the market can't find directions, the technicals do take over. So it seems like we're above the 50-day. We're about to test the 200-day moving average. So the S&P 500, to your point, is up about, you know, almost 1% today with some optimism. However, there's a lot hinging contingent upon the Fed and this earnings season.
And let's talk about the CPI, Consumer Price Index report that will come out tomorrow morning. The consensus estimates, the economists polled by Dow Jones, expect about prices to cool by just 1%, one-tenth of a percent increase over the month of December, and a 6.5% increase over the year before. Another sign, at least the economists believe, that prices have plateaued and that inflation has at the very least leveled off.
Well, Rob, I think you used a word earlier, trajectory. I think it's really important from inflationary perspective, the trajectory. We are seeing the bait. We saw that high print back in June of 2022 of 9.1%. That was the highest reading we've seen on CPI in over 40 years. So the trajectory of inflation is going lower, and that allows the Fed to potentially be less aggressive. So you're seeing some of the NASDAQ names, and what a horrible year it was for some of the technology names, down over 30% for the QQQs. That's the ETF that we like to utilize to follow the NASDAQ 100. But if you look at some of these names, and you know, many, many years ago, Rob, there was an old investment thesis called the dogs of the Dows, and you'd pick the worst stocks in the Dow Jones. Well, now I'm talking about the nasty of the NASDAQ. Look at some of these names, NVIDIA, Tesla, Lucid, and even AMD, the chip maker. You're seeing these come back to life in this first couple of weeks of trading session due to the fact that inflation is cooling and maybe the Fed will be less aggressive, and therefore interest rates, because everything's tied to interest rates, we're seeing the 10-year come back at 3.5%. So it is putting out an optimistic landscape in the short term for us in January. And if January does go well, Rob, 85% of the time, the rest of the year bodes well as well.
And you don't want to, whether you're the Fed or an investor or just an observer, you don't want to spike the ball on the 45-yard line. But it does seem like the Fed has been able to crush early 80s inflation without using early 80s interest rates. Because I'm looking at the historical prime rate, August of 1983, 11%, June of 84, 13%, and we're able to at least cool inflation so far with interest rates that haven't even approached the late 90s.
Yeah, I ran out of fingers and toes when you started talking about those numbers above 10, Rob. So that is frightening when you see those type of rates. But I think the Fed is in a very interesting moment in time where they have to realize they have to let it digest. We're going to see this inflation abate, let equities heal a little bit. And what's remarkable to remember is that volatility, we think about volatility always taking markets down. You could see volatility take markets up. There could be a bit of a melt up here. I'm not saying it's sustainable, but short term, it seems like a lot of people, the pessimism, the sentiment has soured so much. I think we move about 5% higher in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'm just thinking very quickly about some of the dire predictions that we had over the course of 2022 about runaway inflation, about $150 barrels of oil, about dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, and only a fraction of that came true.
That's right. And I think if you look at the Fed has been horrible. For decades, they've been horrible at forecasting. They were just talking about inflation last year being transitory. So for us to really trust the Fed's outlook, I think you have to be very considerate that the economy, despite the fact we are seeing growth lowering, the economy is in pretty good shape, and households, consumers out there, are still doing fairly well.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial, based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, the necessity of having a plan in place in case of death.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. A death in the family is a traumatic event, but it can be made even tougher when there isn't a clear financial plan in place. Let's get some direction from Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group, based in Chicago. The website, engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thanks for joining us today. And this kind of keys off a discussion we had a couple of days ago about what you can do if you find out that you're on the end of a financial windfall, whether it's you win a lottery prize or you receive a portion of a loved one's estate after they die. And the point the guest made was that it takes a long time to receive a financial payout from an estate. And it's made even more complicated by the fact that only 50% of Americans have an estate plan in place. And if you don't have an estate plan in place, your life gets extremely complicated when someone else's life ends.
And first and foremost, the word estate plan may lead some to believe you need to have a sizable net worth or assets before considering these documents. And this could not be further from the truth. I mean, for us, the basic block and tackling of having an estate plan in place is essential for nearly everyone, from the elements of a simple will to powers of attorney for property and health are one of the most basic documents that nearly everyone should have in place to avoid those things that you've just mentioned in terms of delays and unnecessary legal expenses.
And it's not that hard to do. And as you said, maybe the notion of an estate plan may scare you away or may think, well, I don't qualify for this. But yes, you do. And it's not that hard to do. I mean, my wife and I did it a couple of years ago. You go meet with an attorney. It's a meeting that lasts maybe an hour or two, depending on how much chit chat you engage in with your attorney. And you can get it done for a reasonable amount of money.
Well, the important part is we all know we're going to take our first breath and last breath. But when we talk about death and disability, it's often a difficult topic. And I can tell you in our financial planning process, the estate plan is one of the first areas we focus on because there's a lot of confusion and even lack of organization, even amongst our most sophisticated clients. So just crossing the hurdle of having the conversation is difficult. But depending on the complexity of your situation, this is where, in terms of your point, seeking out a qualified estate planning attorney is essential because, again, we all know the inevitable, but we don't want to add to the grief in the unlikely event of someone becoming disabled or, obviously, in terms of death. We want to make that transition as smooth as possible.
And I have a little bit of experience in this. We had a death in our family about a month ago, and I'll tell you right now, when that person passes away and you're going to the funeral, you're going to the visitation, you're talking to mourners, you're arranging travel for out-of-town relatives to come in, you're not thinking about just the machinery of death that takes over when your life ends, about planning funerals, making sure the death certificate is in place, just all the little things. You're not thinking about them when you're in mourning.
Yeah, again, when we're guiding clients, that's what we want them to focus in on, the celebration of someone's life, not having to worry about the angst of what's next. And for all your listeners, the best gift you can give your family, your loved ones, or even your favorite charity is by having these documents in place to speak on your behalf when you no longer can. And so, again, we want people to focus in on the celebration of life, not the angst of the worry about where are these monies going or who are they going to go to. So, again, having these straightforward documents in place is absolutely essential in nearly everyone's plan.
It can be a difficult conversation. It can be an awkward conversation. But which is the more awkward conversation? Is it the younger relative sitting down an older loved one and saying, look, we know you're getting close to the end. You should write out and have an estate plan and have a funeral plan ready to go that we can call upon. Or is it an older relative saying, look, I got my affairs in order. You, younger person who's not thinking about death, you should do that too.
Well, we work with a lot of multi-generational clients, and we're very emphatic about that. We understand that, you know, the matriarch and patriarch have their plans in place, and we want to make sure their kids have these things in place because especially for younger people, especially younger families, they're not thinking of, wow, you know, what if something happens to me? And that's why, again, it's essential. Every generation should have these elements in place. But again, the trick comes in the conversations. You know, when you start talking about money and families, things can get a little difficult, but again, just making sure that each one of these generational levels have these documents in place is always a very good check-in.
And also, not to get too morbid on a spring-like Wednesday afternoon, I mean, it's not every day, it's 50 degrees in January, so I don't want to bring the mood down too much, but if you're an older person, your death sometimes takes place slowly over the course of a couple of years. You have a long illness, your body begins to break down, and as that happens, you have plenty of time to have those those conversations about your end-of-life plan. If you're younger, more often than not, the end comes very suddenly. And then your relatives and your loved ones are left in the lurch to figure out what you were thinking before you died.
Yeah, great point, Rob. The sooner the better in terms of getting these documents in place. Because ultimately, if you're deemed to become incapacitated, you can't do these documents. But again, the older generation, we tend to, you know, sort of, again, like you said, it takes a little bit to kind of get to the end where, again, younger folks tend to go much sooner. And again, not to be morbid on this beautiful day, but ultimately, again, having these documents in place, having these conversations within your family is so essential, especially if you're a single surviving spouse. This is where it gets really important to make sure that all the documents are aligned, the titling of your accounts are aligned with your estate plans. One of the things that we often see is that there's a lack of coordination when we're doing these comprehensive plans. So again, take the time, seek out good qualified advice from an estate planning attorney and a certified financial planner to make sure these things are in place. So when the inevitable comes, people are celebrating your life rather than going through the additional grief, as you had mentioned earlier.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, the latest on the mortgage and housing markets.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Demand for mortgage refinancing is on the rise. Let's check in on that and on the housing market with Brian Wickard, president of Acunet Mortgage based in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, thanks for joining us this afternoon. People want to refinance because interest rates have plummeted from 7% to the high sixes.
Well, they're even lower than that, Rob. And so let's say you're the unlucky person who bought that median-priced home of $295,000 in November. That was the median price in the Chicago metro area. And you put 20% down. Well, if you closed at 7.5%, we could, an efficient company like Acunet could now refinance you at a rate of 6.5%. And check this out. With only $647 in total loan costs, your payment would drop $158 a month. That is like the biggest financial no-brainer of 2023 so far.
And then thinking back to the 20 or 30 years ago, I've heard stories from my parents about how they bought the house they still live in 1984, and the interest rate was well above 10%, and they continually refinanced as the interest rate fell throughout the 80s and into the 90s. How much cost savings or how much extra money did people realize as interest rates went down back then, and what can they realize if they continue to go down this year?
Sure. For most people, it's about cash flow. Most typical American Chicago area homeowners want to know, how much is my payment going down? And the great thing about Illinois, Rob, is that the hard costs of refinancing, which are the title insurance and the closing fee, are extremely reasonable, unlike other states such as Minnesota or Florida. So that's why I'm saying, hey, don't spend, $5,000 on closing costs. A low overhead efficient company can get it done like for less than $650. So that makes it really easy. If I say, hey, you know what? If you've got a $300,000 loan, I can refinance you now from 7.25% down to 6.5% without breaking the bank on closing costs, and I can lower your payment $165 a month. So it's about cash flow. But the other thing that people can do is we can customize their new loan term. Maybe they don't want all that payment savings and they're willing to keep their payment the same, we can write them a 27-year loan, which really, or a 28 or a 25, and that really cuts down on the interest expense over time. So it's about what you want to get done. The key is knowing that, if you closed a loan at 7.25% or 7.5% in late 2022, you should really be, well, we'd like to have people check it out with us, but take a look at it. It might be worth your while.
Is this reduction in mortgage rates, is this the beginning of a trend, or is this merely a respite?
No, it is the beginning of a trend, because remember, the reason that rates got so high was inflation. the consumer price index. And we have a new consumer price index report coming out this Thursday, which will be really important to interest rates. So what has happened in November and December, and now we'll find out in January, that inflation reading has gone down, down, down. We also finally had some reasonably good news from a jobs report from an interest rate perspective. So this trend should continue. Again, another reason why you probably don't want to break the bank on closing costs. You know, for example, I can get somebody a 5.99% interest rate on the 30-year fixed rate, but their closing costs are going to be a couple thousand bucks. So we're into this incrementalism, if you will, like you described your parents and others, where, hey, let's take the winnings that are on the table. Let's do a low-cost refinance, grab those winnings, lock them in. Maybe we're going to have another chance to do that later in 2023, if the trend continues.
Brian Wickard, President, Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today. If you missed any part of the Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast is available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.